everybody. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode number 176, to be exact. This is a no tinfoil hat preparedness and survival show. The reason I don't go tinfoil hat on you is I really don't believe in that kind of stuff. Plenty of other podcasts out there, not this one. I just keep this rooted in common sense and just talk about preparing for everyday type of disasters. And whether you want to realize it or not, a disaster can happen each and every day. Maybe not a full-scale, major, end-of-the-world kind of disaster. That's not what I'm talking about. Losing jobs, running short on supplies, first aid emergencies, deaths in the family, a weather event that comes through and wipes out power, or makes people flood to the grocery stores and wipe out all the shelves of food and things like that and supplies. Those are the types of things that can and do happen. Earthquakes, tornadoes, you name it, blizzards during this time of the year, all kinds of things. So in this episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about herbs. Now, if you remember back to episodes 154 and 160, I interviewed Wade from Louisiana. He's an herb expert, and he's very good at it. He's very good at growing herbs, storing herbs, dehydrating herbs, understanding what they're used for, what they're not used for, the limitations of them, and so forth. So I had a chance to actually meet him while I was in Louisiana on a business trip. We went to a park, we sat down at a picnic table, we talked about herbs. He brought a bunch of his herbs with him, he brought his camp stove. He showed me some things that he makes and some things that he does with herbs. Pretty cool stuff. So I think you're going to really enjoy it. You know, a lot of us have gardens and we grow our own food and things. Are you growing your own herbs? Are you storing herbs? Do you have a basic knowledge of what herbs do and what some of the basic things you can do with some of the more popular herbs that are out there? So this is Herbs Part 3 because it's the third time that I've had Wade on this show. Just a couple of quick announcements real quick before I turn on the interview. The website is todayssurvival.com. That's todayssurvival.com. My email address is bob@todayssurvival.com. I got some good emails lately. Towards the end of this show, I will address some listener feedback. But that's bob@todayssurvival.com. There's two S's in that, by the way, todayssurvival.com. And please become a member of our forum. We got a good forum group going. A lot of practical people that want to have discussions with you about preparedness. It's a good group. Do me a favor. If you do join our forum, and I hope that you do, please send me an email and let me know that you joined. It's the best way I can keep spammers out of the forum. I will get an email telling me that you are waiting to be approved, and I'll approve you as quick as possible and send you a confirmation back to your email box. Again, join our forum. Email me at bob@todayssurvival.com when you sign up. All right, let's get right to the interview with Wade in Louisiana, not too far from New Orleans, about herbs, part 3. Okay, I got the pleasure of being with Wade in Louisiana. As a matter of fact, I really am here in Louisiana with Wade. We're up in the Slidell area. And if you guys remember, Wade was on the podcast several weeks ago. We talked about herbs, and I asked him to come back on and do some more material about herbs, about storing herbs and using them. Now, part of what you're going to hear is going to be on the regular podcast, Today's Survival Show. And then part of it, for those of you who choose to support my show, we're going to get more in-depth, and some of it will be on the Survival Champions Club podcast. Wade, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
I appreciate that. Let's do this. For people that didn't get a chance to listen to the first episode that you did on herbs, explain a little bit about your background again, and then we'll get right into the meat of the matter.
Well, since I was about 8 years old till about, I would say about six, between 15 and 16, I've been out in the woods all my life, pretty much. I spent most of my summers in Missouri, just basically being out there, being away from home, and just otherwise just learning all the different functions of what grows in my area. I've been in South Carolina, I've been in Norfolk, Virginia, I've been pretty much around the world since my dad was part of the Navy.
Now, and you did some studying on
ERGs too, didn't you?
Yes, I've actually went to college for about 3 years on, my specialization was going to be what they call eclectic psychology, which deals with natural remedies for disorders of the brain, dealing with things like ADHD, Alzheimer's, pretty much you name it.
Yeah. So. And so you spend a lot of time studying herbs in that capacity.
Yes, sir.
And you've got a really good knowledge, and I really appreciate it. And, you know, we're here. We're outside in a park, actually. It's a beautiful afternoon, and we're sitting here at a picnic table. And so that's good. So let's talk a little bit about harvesting herbs, because you put some notes together here, which are really good. And let's go over some of it.
Well, when I've had a couple of people I've asked on the forums what they would like me to talk about, and a couple of the people responded that they want to see more of how to store
right.
and how to harvest herbs.
And storing also, and harvesting.
Yeah, and also how to identify.
Right.
I can't really help you too much on the identifying, because different species of the plant grows differently, but I can give you some good
research. It depends
research.
On what part of the country you're in.
Yeah, and also... mint has like 15 different family classifications to it, and all those have sub classifications to it. So, and I don't want people going out into the woods and just picking random herbs thinking it's mint. That's not a good philosophy to go by.
No, and that's not very safe either.
Yeah, but what I can do is I can go ahead and I can give you the links to look at some good resources to actually find out what grows in your area and go on from there.
Let's do that.
So when you harvest a herb, let me say this, there's two ways to harvest it, either what I call kitchen top herbs, which means you're growing it literally in your kitchen, on your kitchen countertop.
Which I've done that.
The only thing you really have to do is just basically try not to take too much of the herb and use a clean pair of scissors. For instance, basil, when you clip one of the stalks, get it as close as possible to that stalk, because that's going to leave less scarring.
Okay, so what you want to cut it as clean as possible and leave less scarring. Why?
Why? Because plants are there. It's living tissue to the plant. It's like having a finger cut off of us. If you do, I'll put it to the analogy like when you get when surgeons cut off a part of the body. They don't take a rusty hacksaw and they don't cut it off and then suture it up. They use clean surgical instruments to do that.
And it's same with cutting an herb.
Yeah.
Because you're going to use this for a specific purpose. You need it to be in as good a condition as possible.
A lot of the herbs, they secrete resin that once you cut that herb, it starts secreting. What that also does is it attracts pests, insects, aphids. It also pretty much it destroys the cells of the plants if you do not do it. So when you cut a herb, do it quick, do it clean, and don't do it too much. Because if you harvest too much of the herb, you will kill the plant.
Okay.
So.
Okay, good. And then you've got on here, cut only what you can use.
Yes, that deals with how do I put this? Conservation of your resources. For instance, when you go deer hunting, they'll say there's 500 deer in the square park. They're not going to give 500 deer tags out there. They're only going to give 200-300 tops. The reason for that is because they want the deer to spawn. They want them to continue to grow. The same thing with the herb. If you cut too much of that herb off, it's trauma to the plant. You will kill it. And so what I try to tell people, and not only that, but you lose some of its efficiency. When you let an herb set out in the sun or into the air, there's three things that are going to affect it. It's air, light, and time. Now, you can get rid of most of the air. You can slow down. You can slow down some of the time. The light destroying the herb, but time you really can't do much about.
No, you can't. So. You can't roll back time.
Yeah. So
you also have on here on your notes: don't store wet.
Don't store wet. Yeah, that's a case of experience for me. A lot of times, what people do is when they wash the herb, which is always a good practice, they want to take their faucet and they literally want to hold the herb over the water.
Yeah, that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, and that's that's good to a point. But if you're using it right away, perfect, go for it. If you're actually going to be dehydrating it
and storing it, then you don't want to do
that. Don't do that, because that's going to lead to fungus. It's also going to lead to a bunch of host of variety things that it's going to destroy. I remember one time I was storing oregano, and I actually picked oregano and I washed it exactly like I described, and then I put it into an airtight container, much like the one we got here. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, when I came back a week later, I had green slime.
Yep.
So
a lot of nasty green slime.
Yeah. And so the stuff I was using, the pasta that I was going to put it on, I really didn't feel like eating after that. So.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Now, you've got on here three methods of preserving herbs. Method A, you've got old-time methods.
Old-time method.
Old-time. My reading glasses aren't on. That's the problem.
Old-time method usually involves you take in, let's take mint here.
Okay.
What old-time method is basically when I harvest this
mint. Hang on a second. Where'd you get this mint? Did you grow it?
I actually got it from the store.
Okay.
Which
okay.
I'll be talking about later.
Okay.
You know, different ways that you can actually get herbs. Now, when you get this herb from the plant itself, what you do is you just basically take 3 to 4 cloves of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me get ones that have actual leaves on them. Okay. Now, what I'm doing is I'm actually putting the leaves towards the thing. Mm-hmm. And then what I'm going to do is I'm either going to take twine or rubber bands. And I got some here.
Now, I know this is an audio podcast, and because it's an audio podcast, you really can't see what Wade's doing. I might get some videos of this a little bit later, possibly put them on the YouTube channel. But what you're doing is you're basically using a rubber band.
Yeah, and you could also use cotton twine.
Yep.
It really doesn't matter. And then what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hang this up.
Yeah. So basically, you've just basically held it together.
Yeah.
With a rubber band.
And now what's going to happen is eventually this herb is going to dry out. It's going to.
You've taken three pieces of mint.
Yes.
And you've put it together, and you're going to dry it out.
Yeah.
What are you going to hang it on?
Just a thumbtack nail. A nail thumbtack. I've also seen people that use, they got different points of string that they got hanging up in their kitchen.
Now, this is a method of preservation.
Yeah,
this is the way you're gonna preserve it.
Yes.
But what would you preserve it for? What would you use it for later?
Mint specifically?
Yeah.
Mint is good for a variety of different things. You could use it for toothaches. You can use it to, obviously you can use it for food.
Mm-hmm.
You can also use it for mouthwashes. It's also a good antiseptic.
So if you had to try to survive even for a short time on some of this, it can be an antiseptic, it can be food.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things you can use with it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I want to state right away before we get any further, too, we're not doctors. We're not giving medical advice. You know, some of these things might work for you, they might not, but I want to put that disclaimer on there that we're not physicians giving medical advice. But your experience, Wade, with these herbs seems to have helped you in a lot of ways, and you're using these herbs in a lot of cool ways too.
Yes. Going back to mint, I got some other notes here, and this is me reading off my paper for the listeners here. What mint has is it's antipyretic. That means it's anti-itch, antibacteria, kills bacteria, diuretic, which just basically means it helps to increase the water output for
it's
the
diuretic
body.
Yeah.
Yes. Anesthetic, you can use it to basically kill pain that's on your skin. Antispasmatic, which means that if you have muscle spasms, you could use it for that. Carminative, which means helps prevent gas. Stimulant, and a stomach tonic, for lack
yeah.
of a better word. So,
so you just demonstrated how basically you just take three pieces of mint and you hang it up and you dry it. Another preservation method you've got is putting them on a shallow cookie sheet.
Yeah, the way you do that is, I'll demonstrate this. Pretend this is just basically a cookie sheet, okay? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay the herb out.
Yeah. Now, what he's got here is he's just got a plastic container, and we're just making believe that this plastic container is a cookie sheet. And you're just going to lay it out flat on the
on
the cookie sheet. Yep.
And then what I personally like to do, because it helps drying it, is I put them stem to stern, sort of like that. I don't know how you would describe that.
Stem to stern is pretty good.
And then what I do is I just line the cookie pan just like this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the stove and I'm going to set it for about 180. I want that stove as low as possible.
180 degrees.
And then what I do is I keep the door open, but I go ahead and put this cookie pan in the stove. And what I do is that every
third... You keep the stove door open?
Yes.
Okay.
Keep the door open. You're not cooking the herbs. You're drying the herbs out.
Okay.
So every 30 minutes, what you want to do is you want to come in, and you just want to flip the herb with tongs over.
Yeah, so you basically... Down. It's like flipping burgers.
Yes.
But you're flipping these herbs on the cookie sheet.
Exactly right.
And your notes say you do that for about 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, 2 to 3 hours. It really depends on how fresh the herb is. And
that dries them out.
How much herbs you actually have.
Boy, that mint smells good. Man, that smells good. I love that stuff. Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, then method C, you can use a commercial dehydrator.
Commercial food dehydrator. That's probably the easiest and simplest you'll get next to the stove method.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you just treat it like basically you would any other type of thing you're dehydrating. It's not really, you don't need a lot of knowledge on that. It's basically self-explanatory. And, you know, you just basically, like you were dehydrating anything else.
Right. So you store herbs... For what reason? Are you storing them for medicinal purposes or food purposes or both?
Food, medicinal, also aromatic.
Okay.
Some herbs, like you've demonstrated with mint, smell really, really good.
Yeah.
But mainly medicinal, you know.
Let's talk about a survivalist application.
Yes.
You know, most people know I don't go tinfoil hat, but let's say that there's some kind of disaster that hits and for... A week or two, food's in short supply, and medical attention's in short supply.
Okay.
You're going to turn to some of your herbs, aren't you?
Yes. I'm not saying that herbs are the cure-all for everything.
No.
But
no.
I'm going to do what I have to do to protect my family. If my child's screaming of a sore throat, I'm going to use whatever resources I have to try to soothe that child. If it's an earache, if it's a wound... whatever the case is, I'm going to use whatever resources I have to help.
What herb would you use for the sore throat?
The sore throat, sage, eucalyptus, rosemary.
Yeah, eucalyptus, of course.
Yep. Stuff like that.
Sage, rosemary, and thyme, right? and some eucalyptus, okay.
So.
All right, well, look, good. That's some good info there about preserving. Let's see, you've also got some info on here I want to cover. After the herb has dried up, you can either use the herb in its dried form or grind it up with a small food chopper. Explain that.
What you do is you basically... okay, let me demonstrate here.
Yep.
May.
Yeah, no problem.
You're going to have an herb that looks something like this. Well, actually, where's the other? Yeah. Let me get eucalyptus. Eucalyptus is a good one.
Yeah.
You can actually... teach you a little bit about eucalyptus. When you actually dry eucalyptus out, you're gonna have what looks like this. Now,
did you grow this or buy it?
No, I actually bought this.
You bought it, okay?
Yeah,
eucalyptus. All right.
Now you're gonna have what they look like is a leaf, okay? Mm-hmm. And most herbs, when you dry them out, they're gonna look like that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and basically, it looks just like a dried leaf.
Yep. And all I need is basically a food processor. Or if I'm really in a hard spot, I could actually take a plastic bag. And what I can do is I could actually take my hand, and I could actually take my hand and grind it up that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people use a mortar and pestle. You know, they basically put the flour in there, or the herb in there, and they take that pestle around, and they grind it up that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then what you're going to get is something that looks like this. And if I may demonstrate.
Yeah.
After you grind it out, you're going to get
like a bunch of oregano.
Yeah. And this is actually basil.
Yeah, it's basil.
So, and that's pretty much what you, when you will go to the store, this is what you're going to get. It's the same thing, pretty much, only the stuff that you're growing is a lot better for you because there's a lot less pesticides and different stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no, you know, preservatives and junk.
Yeah.
Now, you said basil can be used. What do you typically use basil for other than...
Basil.
Makes great seasoning, but what else do you use it for?
Well, basil, if I can go back to my notes, I can actually give you the stuff that it can be a calmative, prevents the formation of gas. galactagog, which means the substance that promotes lactation in humans or other animals. If you got a child that is breastfeeding and its mother is sick and you need to increase the breast milk, this is something that I would use for it.
Basil? Really?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Stomach salve, you can turn it into a salve for insect bites, acne, ringworm, thrush. As an oil, it helps sore muscles, repels insects, and fights fungal infections. So.
Yeah, I have heard that basil fights some fungal infections from time to time. Okay. See, and these are all things, you know, these are all things where, again, this isn't replacing medicine. We're not saying that it's replacing a doctor visit, but if the stink hits the fan and you're in a situation where maybe you can't get to medical attention right away, you know, it might take several hours, a day, a couple of days before you can get medical attention. There are some good uses for herbs.
Yes, very, very much so.
Okay. And now you've got also here on the notes that we're looking at, says, remember, you can always use an herb powder or oil to make more medicine.
Yeah, what that means is... Well, it's kind of, I should have put a hyphen in there, an herb or an oil.
An herb or an oil.
Yeah. Some of the, I personally like garlic-infused oil, which I'm going to be demonstrating later today.
Garlic-infused oil?
Yeah. Okay. What I don't like to do is I don't like to make a lot of the medicines or the concoctions that I make until I'm absolutely sure that I'm going to use them. The reason why is because we have those three little enemies of herbs. We got light, air, and time.
Light, air, and time.
I could always make more medicine out of the herb or the oil, but I can't always take the medicine out of that medicine, and I cannot store that. So it's always better to it's always better to make as much medicine as you intend to use, and you could always go back and you could always make more.
Ah, okay. All right. I want you to key in on a couple of other things, Wade. You mentioned earlier when we first got this started that you wanted to talk about identifying herbs.
Yes.
And then also on here, on your notes, you've got some more information on picking an herb and saving it for later.
Yes.
Let's talk about identifying herbs.
Well, there's a really good website that you can go to, and it's called Southwest School of Botanicals, or you can actually go to Google search or whatever your search engine
is. I think you mentioned that last time, too.
Yeah.
Southwest School of Botanicals.
It's actually called SWSB.
SWSB.
.com, and then also type behind there. There's a lot of analograms that will stand for, you'll get something, the Southwest School of Business or something like that. What you're actually looking for is Southwest School of Botanicals. You might want to put on there Michael Moore. Now, it's not the Michael Moore.
Yeah, not the movie producer Michael Moore.
Michael Moore was basically a hippie, for lack of a better word. He took the better part of 40 years of his life and devoted, he made basically a school that basically taught people how to use herbs in the local Arizona region. Really classic guy. He actually had a DVD set that was 500 hours to actually study herbs and stuff like that. And if you ever get onto that website, it'll take you from maps, all the different, for like mint. I was saying that mint has like 15 different subclassics of mint. You got spearmint, you got peppermint, you got regular mint, you got, you know, I could go on and on. The thing about this website is there's actually links that will take you to maps of where the plant grows.
Oh, cool.
And also...
So you can find if it's growing in your area.
Yes. And also what the plant looks like. You can either get drawings or you can actually get actual photographs of the plant. I prefer the drawings because the drawings are very... there's less artist's interpretation, for lack of a better
word.
There's
fewer artist interpretations
And so you can actually understand that, you know, a eucalyptus leaf looks, it's long and slender, and it's usually a bunch of them on the ends of trees, while an artist might paint that, you know, greenish gray, and you know, when you know,
and an artist's interpretation, you can come up with all kinds of things on that.
So that's why I like using that website. There's okay. Also
SWBS.
Yes.
Southwest Botanicals.
Southwest School of Botanicals.com.
SWBS.com. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. A couple of other things I want you to cover.
Yes, sir.
Where to find herbs?
That, I wanted to say something about that because, like, on the forums, a lot of people ask me to find herbs. That is a very, very broad question, much like when you're dealing with handguns. I cannot tell you what handgun, Bob cannot tell you what handgun you should own. And like that, I can't tell you what herbs grow in your area. You're going to have to look at that yourself. Like I said before, I don't want everybody running out into the woods and seeing a three-sided plant and then automatically think that it's something good for you just to start chewing up. You need to do your research. And I'm not going to tell you that, hey, this is what this plant is. You got to know your research and you got to know what you're doing there.
Oh, you know what? And before I ask you to go to the next point, we made a mistake on that website. It's swsbm.com.
Yes.
SWSBM, Southwest School of Botanicals.
Yes.
Botanical medicine, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And I'll put a link. I'll put a link once again for this episode. I don't know what episode number this is going to be, but I'll announce it in the introduction, and you guys can go to the forum and find that link. Okay. You also have an interesting point here about mingling at farmers markets. Talk about that.
Well, when you're dealing with herbs, what you want to do is you want to go to the resource. You want to go to the places that have resources. There's nobody in the world that knows the earth that grows in your area better than the farmers
that grow
in that area.
No kidding.
A lot of these places, believe it or not, farmers like to hang out at farmers markets. You know, it sounds trivial, but a lot of people think, well, where do I find a farmer to talk to about this stuff?
And you know what? You know what? Let me just stop you there for a minute. I want you to continue. But when I was a kid, you know, we grew up very self-sufficient, and we had what I call a hobby farm. You know, we were always growing our own food as much as we could and raising our own food. That's the way my mother liked to raise us. We used to go to the farmers markets.
Yeah,
you're exactly right about that.
There's
we used to hang out. There's a wealth of knowledge at the farmers markets.
And there's really friendly people. And
yep.
Even if you don't buy anything, these people love to share their passion.
They love to talk.
With other people. And, you know, and it's especially helpful if you're young, too, believe it or not, because it seems like the younger you are when you walk up to these people, the more likely they're going to talk to you.
Yep.
You know.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting tip there. You know, hang out at the farmers markets.
And then also.
And they're selling herbs there, too, aren't they?
Some do, some don't. It really depends on the farmers market and whether the herb is in season or not. But usually, if they're not selling it, what they'll do is they'll be able to tell you what time they can bring their herb in.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the very least, what they can do is they can say, well, I don't grow the herb, but Joe here, who's not at the farmer market, he usually comes Wednesdays, you know, and they can point you in the right direction too. Another good resource is feed stores. You go outside the country. I know it sounds like a stretch, but if you go outside the city a little bit, there's farms. And when these places, when they have to feed their cows or their livestock, they actually have to go to country feed stores.
That's right.
These are also good places to intermingle with people and to find out what grows in their area. You know, and a lot of times I've had one where they actually brought me to their farm and actually showed me what they call skunk cabbage. It was growing. Skunk cabbage. It was growing wild in their farm. So, and trust me, when you get out of the car, you smell it. So,
which is probably why it's called skunk cabbage.
Yes, it is. But it's perfectly edible. At least parts of it is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The problem is getting close enough with a fork.
Yeah, no kidding. Being able to stand, getting close to it. All right, let's talk a little bit about some quick and dirty tricks in the field that you've got on here.
Okay.
Earaches, one thing you talk about.
Yes. Earaches are good. If I may see that, Bob?
Yeah.
So, forgot what I put down here. Most earaches are caused by bacteria, which causes inflammation in the ear canal. It sounds simple enough, but a lot of people... Now, there's actually two forms of earache. There's something that you get fluid buildup in the ear. It's inside the ear in the eustachian tube. There's not a lot you can do about that because you actually have to go to a doctor and they actually have to drain your ears.
Right, that's right.
But the type of earaches we're talking about is a bacterial inflammation type that go inside the ear canal. Warm olive oil helps. I like to steep mine in garlic and basil. And
use garlic and basil?
Yes,
How do you do that? What do you do with it?
Well, I can actually show you if you
okay.
want.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll try the best for people listening to this to describe what he's doing as he's showing it to me.
So what I'm going to do is I got a simple camping stove here.
Yep.
And,
I like your camping stove, by the way.
Yeah, this is a Dragonfly, MSR Dragonfly, so I didn't want to turn this on too.
Yeah, this is cool. What's your fuel source?
This is camping fuel.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is just light the cup. And then, let's stuff back.
So what are you preparing to do here?
I'm actually going to be making a garlic basil infusion.
A garlic basil infusion?
Yes.
Cool.
And what that's going to be is that's actually a thing that it's going to be oil that you can actually stick into your ear, that you can actually put drops of oil into your ear.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so you're lighting the camping stove.
Yes.
Because what are we going to heat up?
We are going to heat up, first of all, put a pan there.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually I want to get some olive oil. And olive oil.
This is very similar to my camping stove.
Yeah, olive oil.
Okay, so you're dropping the olive oil into the pan.
Yes. Actually, we're getting winded here. Let me take some garlic first. And what I'm going to do with garlic is I'm going to take 4 cloves of garlic.
Okay.
Okay, so. And get them into the pan here. Actually, I like to chop these up. But right now, in a pinch, I just, when you're in a hurry, just go ahead and just try to chop these up as best you can, but right now we're kind of in a hurry. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to cut these like 2
okay.
or 3 different times.
So you're basically chopping them up into 2 or 3 different pieces.
Yes.
Each little clove of garlic.
Yes. And,
I can smell that garlic.
Garlic is used throughout the centuries, and it treats, it's been
Yeah, garlic's been used a lot.
Yeah. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take this.
In fact, I'm fighting back a cold. It'll probably help me.
Yeah, and I just put that into the pan.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add about 4 tablespoons of garlic.
Fire went out. We're going to have to relight, though.
Okay.
Okay, so you chopped up about 3 cloves of garlic, and then you're putting about how much olive oil in there?
About 4 ounces.
About 4 ounces of olive oil. Okay. Yeah.
And olive oil is a very, very good resource to have. Just in normal everyday things.
Yeah, the wind's knocking out our flame.
So, yeah.
Okay, we had a brief pause there because the stove went out. We kind of had to rearrange our stuff here. And by the way, for people who want to know, I'm videoing this just a little bit. I'm going to take about 5 or 6 minutes of video, and I'm going to put this on. I'm going to post this video onto YouTube and then on the forum as well. So after you get done listening to this podcast, you might want to go to the forum, Today's Survival Show forum, find the link to the YouTube video for this. But as you can see here on the camp stove, he's got his mixture of garlic and olive oil.
Yes.
So you got a bunch of garlic that's chopped up.
Yes. And what you want to slowly see is you just want to keep stirring it.
Okay.
And then eventually what's going to happen is the oil is going to heat up, and it's going to start to boil this garlic cloves.
Yeah, it's going to boil the garlic.
And what that's going to allow that to do is it's going to release a lot of the essential oils and the acid, the amino acids and so forth from the garlic. And once the olive oil starts boiling up, and you're going to see that in a minute.
Okay.
So, and then we're going to just basically there's just a matter of setting.
And so we'd be preparing this if, for example, we're going to treat what?
Earaches.
Okay.
So, I'll show you in just a second.
Nice camp stove. Okay, so we had another little pause there while we're boiling this. And, okay, part 2 here. I wanted to pause this video so you guys can see now this boiling. And you were saying, Wade, that you don't want to let it boil too much.
Yeah, this is like basically what... it's almost like you're... doing French fries, and you don't want to let this get too hot because it will flame up on you, and oil fires are notoriously hard to put out.
Yeah, no kidding.
So just basically once it starts boiling, like you see that the bubbles are coming off the garlic a little bit there, just go ahead and turn the heat completely down and let it simmer.
Okay.
Now the next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to take some basil, and I'm going to take about 4 teaspoons or so, about 2.
Okay.
Remember, when you're dealing with herbs, there's not a lot of herbs that are exact. So just basically sprinkle that in like that.
Okay.
And just let it coat. Now, I'm going to let this set for a second or two. And what I'm essentially doing is because I got the garlic oil in there, right now before I put the basil in there, I had garlic. I just had what they call garlic infused oil. Now, that's going to be useful in treating just bacterial infections in general.
Right.
It's my personal preference is that it treats a lot of different things on me personally. So I, you'll notice that a lot of my medicine and a lot of the concoctions that I come up with are based on garlic-infused oil, and okay. that's how you make it. Now, I just added...
Now, is this stuff that you studied?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
this and you've studied it, you've used it, and it's
yes.
working.
Oh, yeah. So, I get a lot of earaches because I do smoke cigarettes. So,
And this helps you, huh?
This helps.
Okay.
Olive oil itself is going to help you just to get the wax out of the ears. Because a lot of times what you'll have is you'll have a clogged piece of wax in your ear canal. Olive oil in itself is going to help. Garlic is going to keep down the bacteria. And then the basil is also going to help keep down the bacteria, too. Now, what I'm doing here is I just took a cup and I just attached an coffee filter.
Right. You wrap the coffee filter around a cup. So yeah. you're going to filter that.
Yes. And then what I'm going to do is, because we don't want to put foreign material into our ear, is I'm just going to sit there and I just want to strain the basil and the garlic out of it.
Okay. Okay, you're straining the basil and the garlic out of it.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're going to set that there. And then what we're going to do is, this might be a little
bit. And once again, folks, I know you're listening to this, but you got to go to the forum and look at the video link of this as well.
And so I'm looking for, yeah, here we go. Now what I have here is, while that's starting to seep through it, I might have to squeeze it a little bit. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a bottle. And if you notice, these are colored bottles because, again,
I saw that.
One of the things we don't want is we don't want
light. Light is an enemy.
In there.
So you got to have a colored bottle.
And then I'm going to find my little funnel, but you don't have to have a funnel. You can use a piece of paper and a cone shape. We're going to put it like that, and then what we're going to do is, because we want to hurry up and get this done, is we're going to squeeze this out. Okay. So, essentially, I'm just squeezing that out, because, and it might be a little bit warm, you might want to wait a couple of seconds, and you don't have to squeeze it out. It's just for the sake of time.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing is I'm just squeezing this out, but you just want to kind of let it set. And this oil is a little bit hot, but
I bet it is.
That's okay, because I got thick fingers. So now, what we have, we want to make sure we squeeze it fully, or let it fully dissolve in there. Okay, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we might have a little bit extra, but that's okay. And what we're going to do is we're just going to put this into... Now, this is something that you want to have on standby.
Okay, so you're running it through the funnel.
Yeah, directly into the bottle.
Okay.
And then what I'm going to do is, with that, I got an actual bottle here that has a dropper. Now, what you want to do is, when you use this, you could actually put it into a cup of boiling water, and or you could put it next to your body when you need to warm it up, or just drop it off into unscrew the cap,
mm-hmm.
put it into a pot of boiling water, let it heat up, and then when you have an ear infection, or if you got a child that has an ear infection, just put 3 or 4 drops in their ear, mm-hmm. and then cap it with a cotton ball.
So you've put it into a bottle with a dropper?
Yes.
With a drop applicator?
Yes.
Now, can that be stored?
Yes.
How do you store that?
Just put it into a fridge. A fridge is good. If okay. you can't do a fridge, what you can do is you can just put it in a cool, dry place.
Okay.
So
just store it in a cool, dry place, cool, and you're good. Place. What if it's the middle of summertime and it's 100 degrees out? You're going to have to find a way to keep it cool.
Well, you can also put it in a bag, and you could put it into a rushing stream,
okay.
which is another way to do it.
True.
Yep. But basically, like I said before, I like making all my medicine and concoctions like this on the day that I intend to use it.
Yep.
You know, or if I make something like this, I intend to use that within a week.
Yeah, so it's going to be fresh.
Yes.
Okay.
So.
Well, good. Good. And again, that last 5 minutes that you just heard, folks, I've got a good video of it. It's actually a 2-part video. So go to the YouTube channel. Actually, just go to the forum and find the link to the YouTube channel, and you'll be able to watch it. All right, we paused there again to kind of clean up a little bit, and this was good stuff, Wade. So this concoction here could help with some earaches, for example.
Yes. for some reason, it really, really helps children's ears.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I said, it doesn't replace medicine, but boy, if you're in an emergency, if you're really in a pinch, if you're in a bind,
yes,
and you've got to give the child just some immediate relief, just something yes. that can take the edge off. Until you can get to medical attention, this would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Yes, and all you got to do
is... It's a mixture of garlic and olive oil.
And basil.
And basil.
And then all you got to do is just get a pot of boiling water, make sure you take the cap off, and just put it in there until it's warmed up. You don't want it scalding hot because you're putting it into a child's ear or maybe even your ear.
Yep.
And you just drop it in there, and then you take three or four drops, and you just seal it up with a cotton ball, and it'll probably give relief.
Great.
So.
Wade, thanks for doing this. Thanks for taking the time to come out to the park and do this. And I'm glad that we had a chance to get together. It's good to meet you in person, and it's good to be able to see some of this stuff. Because, you know, I hope the people go and watch the 5 or 6 minute video that we just put together. And I appreciate it, Wade. Thanks very much. Well, thank you, Wade. Excellent interview and pretty cool stuff there that he was making. Remember, there's about 5 or 6 minutes of that on video. And shortly after this podcast gets posted, maybe even right about the same time, I'll have a link on the forum. There'll be a thread for episode 176. Go to that thread, take a look at the link. You can go to YouTube. You can watch the video that we were talking about here in this podcast. Also, Wade and I spent about another half an hour discussing even more details about some of the medicinal and nutritional aspects of herbs. That will be on my Survival Champions Club podcast. So if you want to hear more, this is a really good subject. You might want to consider a $15 investment in my Survival Champions Club podcast. It is an exclusive podcast. There are no subjects on that podcast that I've covered on this one. So it's unique. It's only $15. It's a way for you to support my show. I don't have sponsors on this show for a reason. I don't want it to be full of commercials, but it is a way for me to raise a little bit of money. If you like my efforts, if you feel that it's within your heart to be able to do that to help out, it's only $15. You'll get some good value for it. Wade is on there, plus I've got some other prepping ideas on there as well. So all you have to do is go to todayssurvival.com, click the Buy Now button, or click the Survival Champions Club podcast link. Let's see, I think that is about, oh, yeah, that's right, listener feedback. Let me cover a couple of pieces of feedback that I recently received. This one comes from Mike. He actually sent me a Facebook message. I'll read this to you, and then I'll give you my comments on it. He said, Bob, I was hoping you were able to catch the premium of Doomsday Preppers tonight on the National Geographic channel. And please discuss what you thought of the show. I'm a fairly novice prepper and basically work at keeping extra essentials on hand in case of an emergency. To see some of the preps these people have set up makes beginning a regiment quite daunting and overwhelming for me. I've, of course, listened to your shows on prepping for beginners and related topics, but seeing all this stuff in live, tangible video on TV is really a wake-up call. So much so that one can be tempted to quit while you're behind. I don't have a lot of money to spend to buy bug-out RVs and arms stockpiles and subterranean strongholds in the mountains and so forth. I value your opinion on how to keep my head from swimming, and I think revisiting the topic of beginning preps on a budget would make for a great show, especially if you go into how more advanced preppers can make the rest of us feel a little easier and a little more comfortable about prepping. Okay, Mike, thanks. First of all, thank you for the message. And Mike, I have not seen the Doomsday Preppers. I imagine that it probably can be overwhelming. This is something that we have to be real careful of. You know, for new people getting into this, I have done some shows on this. I just want to suggest take it a little at a time, just a little bit at a time. Don't think you have to do this overnight. I don't want to get into the business of predicting what might happen, because that's stupid when people try to predict, you know, such and such disaster is going to happen, you know, by this month or this week or this day. That's stupid. However, Mike, I don't think that you're going to run out of time prepping for most of the
common emergencies and common disasters that are going to happen. Now, barring a total collapse of society, which is probably what you see some of these doomsday preppers on TV prepping for, that's kind of some of the extreme stuff I don't really like to get into too much. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I don't prepare for long-term emergencies. I do. I do prepare for long-term. But the vast majority of my preps are for short-term emergencies. Emergencies between 1 day and 30 days in length, max. Doesn't take very long, Mike, to store 30 days worth of food. Doesn't take very long to store 30 days worth of water. It doesn't take very long to put together a decent basic first aid kit and a bug out bag that'll get you through 72 hours of any kind of an emergency. Okay? Doesn't take long to stock up on just a little bit of ammunition and stuff like that. So, you know, little things, little by little, doesn't, you know, it's pretty easy to go buy some herbs, as we talked about in this interview with Wade in Louisiana. You know, so little by little, you know, baby steps, folks, you know, that's my suggestion right there. It is daunting and it is overwhelming. And if you're going to teach prepping, if you're going to introduce somebody to survivalism, basic common sense, modern survivalism, like I like to talk about, if you're going to introduce somebody to this, I would strongly recommend that you do it slowly. So, Mike, watch those TV shows for what they are, and that's TV shows. And try not to get so overwhelmed and do it all at once. Okay, next email I want to cover comes from a guy named Gary. And he made a really good point here. He was commenting about episode 174, where I talked about some sobering statistics. And I gave you guys a link to the 100 signs that we're in some serious trouble in this world. You need to go back and check that out. Go to the forum, by the way, if you're not a member. You can always look, by the way, if you're not a member, you can look at the links on the forum. And check out that article. It's a very good article. Here's what Gary said. It's pretty good. He wanted to add a few things. He said pretty much he just wanted to reiterate that we're all going to have to learn to live at a lower level than we are now. Not that a middle class or a lower class person is going to drop a level or two. Just that the definition of what a middle class level of lifestyle is, that definition is going to change. Part of this relates to the $10.65 an hour fact that I mentioned. That's what the average young person makes when they get their first job. He says, but what have we done? We want to shop at China Mart, better known as Walmart. We want dirt cheap prices. Well, the only way we get those is by using cheap labor coupled with a workforce with no benefits that are cheaply paid. If you paid Walmart employees a fair living wage and gave them all medical benefits and bought products made here in the U.S., then they would not be cheap anymore. So he goes on to say we pretty much have the economy we deserve based on the decisions that a majority of consumers make. Can you really fault the government? They're only doing what we as consumers mostly do in terms of fiscal responsibility. Wow, good point, Gary. You know, I've made that point before and I've gotten in trouble. I've said that to people in my family. I've said it to friends. I believe I've said it once on this podcast. And I've gotten in trouble. People really hammered me on that one. And I'm glad you agree with me. I really do think we get what we deserve. If we want cheap products, if we want cheaply priced products, if we want all this high tech and we don't want to pay much for it, what do you expect some of these companies to do? Now, I know we ship more jobs overseas than we should. You're not going to get any argument from me on that. You know, sorry, folks, I'm beating back a cold here, as you heard in that interview with Wade. But I know we ship too many products or too many jobs overseas. I get that. And I think a lot of corporations have been forced into it because, look, first of all, they want to make a profit. Second of all, the consumer wants to pay less and less and less, right? They want prices to keep on going down, 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 down. Now, we have a system in the United States where we pay employees such a high rate, and we also we pay for so many benefits and so many pension plans and so much health insurance and so forth and so many taxes that it just drives up the cost of goods sold. And what do you expect manufacturers to do? They're going to pass that cost of goods sold on to you, the consumer. Therefore, higher prices. I used to work for a company, a manufacturer. We made everything in China. I was not happy about that. Okay? That was part of a sales presentation, I had to overcome the objection that everything we made was in China. I had people that wouldn't buy from me because we made everything in China. But what do you expect? You know, like Gary says, I agree, we pretty much do have the economy we deserve based on the decisions that a lot of majority of the consumers make. Now, you might be saying, well, Bob, that's not me. Yeah, I know, but it's probably the majority of people. Now, Gary says, well, can you really fault the government? Yeah, I can. I can fault the government for a lot of things that they're doing. They're making the problem a whole lot worse. They're definitely adding to the problem and making it a lot worse. So, Gary, I can fault them for some things, but you make some really, really good points. And your last point here I want to cover where it says that the government's doing what we consumers mostly do in terms of fiscal responsibility. Yeah, boy, isn't that the truth? Look how many irresponsible consumers that we have, fiscally irresponsible consumers, buying crap they don't need, going into debt that they shouldn't go into. You know, folks, you can tell what kind of a prepper someone is by their financial state, typically, most of the time. Because you know what? Finances is that's where a lot of preppers usually start. They usually start by getting their finances under control. I would suggest that you do. I'm not trying to tell you how to live, but I'd strongly suggest that you get your finances under control first before you start stocking any supplies. How are you going to be able to afford to prep if you don't get your finances in order? Okay, so good points and a good email, Gary. Thank you very much for sending that. That's it, folks. I don't want this podcast to go on too long. I'm probably going to have some more email and more listener feedback to cover in the next podcast. If you want to send me some audio comments or if you want to send me a guest podcast or something like that or an audio submission, please feel free to email it to bob@todayssurvival.com. Thanks for listening to another episode 176, actually, of Today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have wherever you are. I'll catch you next week.